Irish music is what we'll be hearing this hour, as we have the group called Comas going to be playing at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana as a presentation of the Piper's Hut concert series. Always pleased to have virtually any of Dean Karas's shows represented here, and usually works out that whoever the touring groups are can get in here in time to do the show, which is fantastic, and Comas are here. Comas are four performers who come from various parts of the world, quite literally, and we'll certainly be hearing the story of how that all happened. Let me introduce them to you. Isaac Alderson is on flutes and Ilan Pipes. Philip Mazur on guitar, and Aidan Burke, is on fiddle, and I don't know if you brought anything else with you. You have a long list of instruments you can play. And then Anna Colleton is the new person in the group.
I am the new guy, yes.
The new guy, on the Bowron. And welcome to all of you. Thanks very much for coming in and making the time.
Thanks for having us.
Philip, I'll put the initial question to you just because you're the one who's been my contact as we've come along. And I don't know if you're the guy who pulled everybody together, but give us a little bit of the history of the group. I know you got started just about 10 and a half years ago.
Well, it actually all started in Belgium, but because of a CD, Aidan Burke, our fiddle player, was doing a solo CD in my studio because I have a recording studio in Belgium. So he came over to Belgium to record with me this album, and we brought in two other musicians just to brighten up the whole album, I suppose. So we had our flute player from Brittany at the time, that was Sylvain Barou, and Jackie Moran from Chicago. And just to pay for the expenses, I thought I'll organize a few gigs in Belgium. So we did a few gigs, and we liked it so much that we decided to form a band. So that was, I think, in 2003. We've been playing ever since. Just the lineup has changed a bit.
The lineup, has changed a bit. But so you're essentially, you and Aidan are the two founders left.
Yes.
Two founding. Yeah. And has it always been just a four-person group?
It's always been a four-piece, yeah. And we had Isaac actually replaced Sylvain, I think, about 2.5 years ago for the first time, and we just kept him because we liked his playing that much. And then we had Jackie Moran on percussion for years, but he has two little children, so all the touring was getting a bit too much for him, so now we're very happy to have Anna with us.
And he's based in Chicago.
He's based in Chicago.
Right. And Anna, I didn't actually have time to pull any information up about you. So where do you hail from originally?
I grew up in Chicago, yeah.
You did?
As well. And I've been living in New York for the last 8.5, 9 years. So I knew Isaac from Chicago originally, and then played a lot of music with him in the last few years in New York as well.
I was going to say, that's his path, about 18 years or so in Chicago, and then and on to onto New York. And actually, the reason I played Celtic Crossroads to start things out is we happen to have had a number of those musicians on the show. It's been a while now when they were performing at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. And we believe that Isaac was in the studio.
I think so. Everything is all a little blur, and I do remember being here. I'm pretty sure it was me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was too, because I know it was not the guy who was playing on the recording that we have, who I think is one of the original members, Richard Nalen, playing whistles and Ilan Pipes and saxophone as well. On some of those, do you saxophone?
I do, as a matter of fact. Not with Comas, only once or twice with Celtic Crossroads. But it was actually my first instrument, and then I took up the Ilan Pipes when I was about 13 years old.
Well, as long as we're on that topic, why the Ilan Pipes? That is not the first instrument that the average Chicago 13-year-old decides to pick up.
But have you heard the Ilan Pipes? They're awesome.
The average 13-year-old has not, I'm quite sure,
at least
not knowingly.
I suppose. Well, I guess I first was exposed to them. I mean, as you all know, Chicago has quite a large Irish music scene. And I heard the pipes in a few film soundtracks and was kind of curious about them. And my mom said, oh, I know a guy who plays those. And so a friend of hers, this gentleman named Cliff Abrams, who lived in Evanston but now lives in Connecticut, loaned me a practice set and some CDs to get me started, and I developed the unhealthy obsession that we call the Ellen Pipes.
You don't really believe in the unhealthy part, I presume.
No, not at all.
When she said that there was, she knew somebody who played. Had you said, "Oh, I really like this particular sound," and that recording you heard?
Yeah, I was really captivated by the sound of them, and kind of was interested in Irish music in general, and so, but you know, not coming from an Irish background, I hadn't really been exposed to it very much as a kid, but then as soon as I discovered it, I really, really took a liking to it.
And then added the flute.
Yeah, the flute. I started playing the flute when I was about 16. I met Lawrence Nugent at a festival in St. Louis, and I started. Actually, no, sorry. I was about 14 when I met Larry. That's right. And I started playing the whistle, and then a couple of years later, I graduated to the flute, and I studied with him for my entire high school years.
Is that really a graduation from flute to whistle? I mean, whistle to flute?
I guess graduation perhaps isn't the right word, but I do find the whistle is a beautiful instrument, but I do find the flute to be quite a bit more expressive. So for me, if I have a choice almost 100% of the time between playing flute and whistle, I'll take the flute. So I considered it a graduation, but many people would not necessarily.
Now, I'm assuming the flute's more difficult, or not necessarily.
Well, I think any instrument is difficult to master, but the flute is a little harder to get started on. I'll put it that way.
I would have thought so. I was just looking at a brief masterclass video on YouTube with James Galway and how to do the embouchure, and that on it by itself I think would be sort of challenging. Mm. But once you get it, you get it. Well, before I ask anybody else anything, why don't we hear you guys play a bit? We heard some other group playing on recording. We've got you live. What would you like to start with?
Go on. I think we're going to play a set from a hornpipe into a few reels. Mm-hmm. And we'll give you the names afterwards.
All right. It's Comas who are going to be playing in Urbana for a show tonight at 8 o'clock. This is Live and Local.
Thank you.
four members of Comas here on Live and Local, live in our studio. They'll be playing at the Independent Media Center in Urbana on the Piper's Hut Concert Series tonight at 8 o'clock. Our program today is made possible with support from The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana, open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. More information is available at 359-7377. The members of the group are Aidan Burke on the fiddle and Isaac Alderson flutes. No Ellen Pipes yet. And Philip Mazur on the guitar, and Anna Colleton on the baron, the frame drum, which entered a little bit into the first tune. Philip, you said you were going to identify those for us.
I'll give it a try anyway. I know the first one is a tune. It was a collaboration between Jackie, so our previous baron player, and myself. We both wrote a part of that tune. And it was actually written for some friends of ours in Chicago. We always take care of our flights because we need to fly a lot. And then we followed up with two reels. Isaac, you know the names of those?
I wish I could say that I did, but I don't.
And it's the Taylor's Timbal and another one. We're not very good in names. But anyway, the last tune, the jig we go into, is written also by a friend of ours. I don't know if you heard the Paul McKenna band, but they had a lovely fiddle player there, Mike Fass, and he wrote that last tune.
You know, one of the things I've occasionally been curious about is names of Irish tunes, or not so much the names themselves, although they're often pretty interesting, but how you keep track of them when you don't know the name.
You just sort of know it as the one that goes dumb.
The one that goes like this?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because to the untrained ear, such as my own. I mean, I'm musically trained, but I'm not trained in Irish music, and so I often, you know, if you said the tune that starts like this, I would probably, isn't that about 50 of them?
There must be really fine
points.
Because I can remember when I was, you know, first getting into Irish music as a kid, and not really being able to distinguish one tune from another so much, but there does come a point at which they sound dramatically different. Like, and you can hear like the first three notes of a tune and be like, oh yeah, that's that one. And it's immediately distinguished from all the other ones that start out in similar fashion. It is bizarre how different they sound once you get used to playing them.
Well, I know that at least two of you do a lot of teaching, meaning Aidan and Philip, and perhaps the other of you do as well. But when you're starting to learn the instrument, or when you're starting to teach somebody who's new on an instrument in Irish music, do you usually start with technique, or do you usually start with learning tunes? Or does that depend?
I think it's very different per instrument anyway, because I teach guitar. So most of the time I'll be starting with techniques, because most guitar players who are not really into Irish music can't really play the tunes yet. I also learn melodies and everything, but technique is very important. But also on all the melody instruments, I think the lads can tell you more about that, but you need a minimum of technique to be able to play a tune anyway. So, because a lot of the ornamentations and things are very specific in Irish music. So in all workshops, you actually work a lot around these ornamentations and things like that. So it's just not just learning tunes, but also technique.
What about you, Aidan, when you're teaching the fiddle?
I mean, I have maybe sometimes 27 people come to a class and everyone's a completely different level. I had one lady who said she hadn't taken the fiddle out of the case for 4 years, you know? And then other people who had traveled over for minutes to specifically be taught something by me. So within that, some people are very happy just to go home with a tune. And other people they've played the tune so many times that they're not even sure if they like it anymore. And then you play it so different. They say, oh, I like that tune. What was that? And you say, oh, no, that was the same tune, just with loads of other stuff in it. And then everything else in between, you know? So if they can play at all, I always like to do this. If they can't read music, I'll help them read music. And if they're brilliant on reading music, I'll take it away and make them use their ear, you know? And that's the best of both worlds, if you can do that.
So I always had the impression that Irish music is almost exclusively learned by ear.
That's the way I learned, for sure. But loads of people now go online, get the books printed out, and if they can play by reading music, they can just go right through the book, you know, and do all the tunes. And then when you hear them play them, you're like, yeah, but it's not quite like it's written in the book. And then you have to add the bits.
Yeah. Do you think that learning with notes from the written page is at all a disadvantage in this style of music?
For me, I don't. You know, like I say, if most people who can read music are classically taught, or they take other lessons, and they're good at reading the music. And when it comes to Irish music, I believe that you can't write the Irish music exactly the way I would like to hear it. It's very close, but there's always something missing.
I think the problem is you never write music the way it's played, actually. Because a lot of the onomatopoeias in there you don't write down, and also the type of feeling, and that's the hardest thing for people who actually learn written music to play it like that. If you don't learn to play it by ear, you never pick up the right way of playing it. So it's okay to learn tunes just written down to get the melodies, but all the things in between are actually things you have to learn by ear, I think. I don't think there's another way.
So you could I imagine that with many people who learn off the page, you have to get them to throw the page away.
Eventually, at some point, I believe that's the easiest way.
I don't think there is. I would consider it like you're not playing Irish music if you're playing it off a page. That's how it feels to me. So I would encourage. I mean, though there's certainly nothing wrong with using it as a tool to learn a melody. I do think it is vital to disconnect from the written note.
They would remember the names, unlike us.
Because at least they saw it on a piece of paper.
Yeah, and also it would remind you how the tune starts sometimes, because even though we played something 50 times, suddenly you can't remember it. And if you've got the book, that's how it starts, and then away you go. Yeah.
So. I'm sure I'd be one of those people that would have to start from the page, since I've only ever learned music that way. And then maybe not, I don't know.
The problem is it is a completely different way of thinking. It's not just learning by ear or by notes. It's the same way, because if you learn something by ear, you don't learn the melody, the first note, and then the second note, and then the third note. You can pick up a melody by having half of the notes in the middle of the tune and then putting the rest in. So, and in Irish music, you have lots of variations and ornamentations, and you can, if you take a simple tune, and da-ba-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-da-dee-dee-dee-da, you can hear that's the same melody. Although if you write it down, half of the notes would be different. So there are the important notes in a melody which you pick up by ear, and that's how you learn to play the melodies by ear, and then afterwards you fill in the notes. And the more you do that, the easier it gets. The problem is if you start learning by the first note and the second note, you will never be able to do that in a session, because the tune comes through at a speed of 130 beats a minute, and by the time you have the third note, they're playing the sixth already, so it's very hard to pick it up that way. So it is a different way of thinking, really.
I would think so. Philip, you're Flemish from Belgium. Is Irish music a big thing in Belgium?
Well, I think Irish music is a big thing everywhere. And in Belgium, well, we have Brussels, which is the capital of Europe. We have the European Parliament there. There's lots of Irish people. There's lots of Irish music around there. I don't think there's enough, but that's another story. But I used to go a lot to Brussels just for the sessions and to meet Irish people. And the other advantage is I live very close to Ireland, so I used to go there a lot. But Irish music is something you'll find worldwide everywhere. Because I started playing Flemish traditional music before I played Irish music. And my brother is a fiddle player. And we were both playing like Flemish traditional music until we heard Irish music and thought, this is interesting, and got addicted.
Are there similarities?
I think there are. It's hard to, I can almost write a book about it, because it's not so easy to tell what actually the differences are. Because Flanders, Belgium, almost every war has been fought out in Belgium. Every country has moved through there. So the identity of the whole folk music is completely different. It's been influenced by everything. Whereas the Irish music mostly survived in the rural parts, so where you have more a tradition really of the Irish people. But what happened in Belgium is, I think, all over Europe, folk music really died out at the start of the industrialization, because people went to work like 6 days a week for 12 hours. There was no time to play music at home anymore. And at that time, the tradition really died out in Holland and Belgium and places like that. And it really survived in places where there was less work. And I think it's only like the 60s they started playing folk music again in Belgium, and they didn't know how to play it. Because they had the written down music, but as you say, it's different than how you play it. So people that were playing the Flemish music at the start, they actually were just playing, I'll call it bad classical music. They were just playing notes, but without the proper feelings. And at that moment, people in Belgium started to look like to other traditions, like in Sweden and Ireland and all places in rural parts in Europe where you still had other ornamentation. And they influenced the Flemish music a lot.
Well, I'll ask you in a little bit after our next tune or song or set of tunes or whatever you're going to do next about some of the influences that you all bring to your version of music, but that's coming up. So.
Okay, in that case, we'll do something where you can notice the influences. So I'll do a Flemish song.
Okay.
About the tradition in Flanders, and then we go into two Flemish tunes.
It's the quartet called Komas who are going to be playing in downtown Urbana, a concert tonight at 8 o'clock. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Schoon lief hoe licht jij hier een slaat in uw eerste dromen wilt opstaan en de mij ontvaan. Hij staat hier al zo schoon. Wat zou ik voor u en mij opstaan? Mijn vensterken niet omsluiten. Plant u van mij waar u gereed. Plant u van mij naar buiten. Waar zou ik een plan? Of waar doen die zal eens heren straten. De winternacht is koud en lang. Hij zal zijn bloemen laten. Laat hij zijn bloeien staan. We zullen hem begraven op kerk of bij de Nederland hier. Zijn graaf zal rozenkens dragen. Schoon lief en op nachtegaaltje zingen en voor ons bij in elke mei zijn mooiste liedje zingen. Thank you.
That's a bit of a romp.
That's one way of putting it.
Comas, the name of the group here, live in our studio on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Well, I know the first one was a Flemish song, and then the other two didn't sound Irish to me. They sounded more like Balkan or something like that.
Well, they're definitely influenced by Balkan music, yeah. But they're Flemish tunes. It's a friend of mine wrote the first one, and I wrote the second one. So
your composition. So tell us what you were singing about the first song.
I was singing about the 1st of May, which is a tradition. It's called De May. It's a tradition in Flanders. You're supposed to buy something for the one you love on the 1st of May. And this song is about a man who's sick, so he comes a day late with his present. And she doesn't want it anymore. She says, you're too late, so you don't really love me.
And that's how it ends?
Well, it ends even worse. She says, I don't want you, because he buys a lovely plant. He says, leave the plant outside. The plant can die. You can die too, because you don't love me, so I don't want to see you anymore.
Glad you went on with some at least semi-upbeat tunes after that. They had a slightly dark tinge to them.
Yeah, typical Flemish song.
Is that right?
No, not really. A lot of the old songs actually are very depressing.
Well, you seem to have survived reasonably well.
I'm okay. Yeah. But yeah. Usually we make up by singing a happy song after that. So.
Well, they were certainly lively tunes that came right after that song. Comas will be playing tonight at the Independent Media Center in Urbana. 8 o'clock is the show start, and you can get some information about them and other upcoming shows on the Piper's Hut concert series by going to pipers-hut.com. And actually, the energy of those last two tunes, particularly the third one, made me think of the name, which I read means more or less power in Irish Gaelic. How did you come up with the tune? Was that your idea, Philip, or was it
looking for a name. I always like short names for bands, so we were looking for a name. So I was actually going to the Irish dictionary to see if there was an Irish word that sounded nice, which had something meaningful. And there was the time we started our band, there was this all slowing down in Irish music again, and we always liked playing fast tunes as well. And since Martin Hayes brought out that album playing slow tunes the whole time, everybody said, you have to play Irish music slow. I said, no, you can play Irish music slow, but it's nice to play with a lot of energy as well. So, and that's why I decided to call our band Comas.
Is that really a trend, or was a trend for
a while?
It was
for a short while, actually.
Because that's certainly not my image of traditional Irish music, is that mostly I hear the up tunes. And then really love to hear a slow air, for example, every once in a while.
Well, I'm lucky you dislike that, actually, because I like the combination of both of them.
Yeah.
And there was definitely that trend, especially in Europe. I know it was almost not allowed anymore to play real fast, because it was wrong. It should be slower.
What would happen if you did it?
People would be upset.
And they'd walk out on your...
I mean, I'm not saying that everybody was doing it, but there was this little bit of this trend, like, you have to play Irish music slower. And I have no problem with playing Irish music fast as long as it sounds okay. It shouldn't sound too fast. It should sound okay, that's what I say.
Well, certainly it should sound energetic. And, that's it. And, yeah. And it certainly did in this case. It was a lot of fun to listen to that tune. And I want to ask a little bit about the Bowron. Anna Colleton is the Bowron player in the band, because I and anybody in the audience can never actually see the other business end of the drum. I mean, the part of the business end, and there really are two business ends, is what you hit it with, mm-hmm. which is what do you call the stick you hit it with?
Well, I generally call it a stick,
okay,
because it is a stick. People also call it a tipper. That's quite a common name for it, and a capine is the other word for it. But generally, it's a stick, and I call it a stick, because that's simple.
Now, is that a thing? I'm not on top of it here, but it looks like it could be like a collection of sticks wound together.
That's a bit of a trend in the last maybe 5 or 10 years. A lot of people have been making kind of a brush stick out of these little sticks, which are actually just like chicken satay skewers that you would buy, and then people will bind them together in the middle. So it's really not... It's not rocket science, but it does give a little bit of a different sound.
But it is a set of sticks bound together.
It is. Right. This is actually a custom-made stick that has a wooden bit in the middle. Mm. But a lot of people, even, you know, top-of-the-line players, will be playing with a bundle of skewers held together with electrical tape.
So the hitting end is one side of, as I was calling it, the business end. The other part nobody can ever see is the part that really varies the sound a lot, the tone of the drum, and that's what you're doing with your hand inside the back of the frame. Can you talk about that a little bit and maybe give us a little demonstration separate from, you know, from these guys here?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, basically what you have is you have a drum that I'm holding vertically on my left knee, and I move my hand up and down the back of the skin to change the pitch as I'm playing. So basically it's like a stringed instrument where, you know, the shorter the length of string is where you're hitting it with your pick or your bow or whatever, it becomes higher. Or like, for example, a smaller drum would be higher than a
higher
drum
pitched.
Roughly. That would be the rough non-scientific explanation. So say if I hit the drum open.
So you don't have your hand in the back at all?
Not at all. Just... And then as I move my hand, you can actually do it either up or down depending on how you play. But as you shorten the distance between your hand and the frame of the drum, where you're hitting it with a stick, the pitch then gets higher.
So the higher it goes, the closer you're getting to the frame?
Exactly. Yeah.
You had to think about this.
Well, yeah, the higher your hand goes, provided that you're hitting the drum between your hand and, like, the space between your hand and the edge of the drum where you're hitting with the stick on the other side, if that makes sense.
This is where a video would be very handy.
Well, for example,
a radio program.
One thing that you can do that, like sliding your hand to change the pitch like I just did. But the other thing that I do a lot to save energy because I'm lazy is I'll leave my hand in one position on the back of the drum, and then I'll hit the drum with the stick both above and below my hand. So the larger part of the skin is going to be lower. And then if I hit on the other side of my hand, the smaller part of the skin is going to be higher. So I'm not moving my hand at all there.
Now you say you're lazy, but I'm sure that's a technique that is taught with regularity.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
And people would say skilled people can add that to their technique.
Yeah. It's actually a lot easier than the other way, to be perfectly honest.
But... You have tuners. Is that what you would call those little knobs you turn?
Mm-hmm.
It's to tighten or loosen the skin and... change the overall tone?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, this drum basically tunes like the way you would have a tuning ring on the outside of a snare drum that pulls a ring down over the head. This is just the opposite. It's a tuning ring inside of the drum, and you turn these little screws, and it pushes the ring up onto the skin to make it higher or lower. And this is a goat skin drum. The skin has not been treated that much, so it tends to be a bit temperamental. Like today, it's been in the car all day, so it's a bit high. So I can use the tuners on the back to kind of adjust that.
I would assume you will vary the pitch, as it were, according to the sound you want for a given tune?
Yeah. Yeah, you would definitely do that. You can certainly tune this drum to a specific pitch if you wanted to. The trouble with that is that if you're then moving your left hand on the back, it doesn't so much matter anyway.
Right, it changes anyhow. Mm-hmm. Well, people are mostly listening, I suspect, for the overall feel, the pulse of the thing, but then also the color, the tonal shifts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to talk any more about it because then I'll get in trouble.
Okay.
It clearly obvious that I don't have any idea what I'm talking about. Komas are my guests on Live and Local today, where our program is made possible by Sinfonia da Camera, presenting Verdi's Requiem on Thursday, November 21st at 7:30 p.m. in the Folinger Great Hall at the Kranner Center for the Performing Arts. Sinfonia will be joined by the UI Chorale and Oratorio Society and the UI Women's and Men's Glee Clubs. Their show is at 8 o'clock tonight at the Independent Media Center, which is still is a post office, but it was the post office building next to Lincoln Square Mall in Urbana, if you haven't heard that name, either Independent Media Center or IMC. What shall we hear next? What shall you play next? What will you play next?
Let's play some Irish music this time.
Yeah,
some actual Irish music.
Sounds good. A few reels into a jig.
Sure, yeah. Thank you.
of the things I've always wondered about in many types of music is how you decide to end the piece.
That's a great question.
That ending raised that question for me.
We always have a lot of fights about this. Because it's always hard. There's so many different ways you can end a melody. So every time we find, we're going to end this one.
But is that true somewhat? I mean, I don't know.
Not really. We usually get on very well. But
we arm wrestle, and Anna normally wins.
One time, Aiden actually tried to bite my ear off over the ending of the tune. It was...
That's really discouraging.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. No,
very tasty.
We all get along very well, so no fighting. But it's one of those things where somebody will have one opinion, somebody else will have a different opinion, so you just try a few things out and see which one feels the most comfortable and most tasteful to everyone.
We try and play what at the end that we all don't mind so much, you know what I mean? one of us might love this way and one of us might love that way, but eventually we'll find one that we're all like, okay, we can do it that
that's
way.
That's fine, yeah.
And then when we play with somebody else, we do it our way, you know what I mean?
The compromise ending. Well, that one, and that one, if anybody happened to have been snoozing for any reason during
they
that
wouldn't
tune,
be doing your
they
show.
Wouldn't
Come
be
on,
right
they
at the end. Well, yeah. But the end would, well, what just happened? Which I was not snoozing, but it caught
we
me.
We do have some people asleep in the audience. We have many old age people, lovely, come to see me, my friends, and they're sleeping. One of our good friends fell asleep watching us play. It's great fun, you know. He actually had the video camera in his hand as well, so he couldn't deny it when it went to the floor. But he had been up for 3 nights, you know. So.
I always think it's a compliment if people fall asleep with your music.
Because they're good and relaxed.
If it's really bad, you wouldn't fall asleep.
You'd just leave.
You'd leave, that's right.
Might just leave. I'll reintroduce the band members. Aiden Burke is the fiddler. Isaac Alderson is on flutes. We haven't heard you
play the pipes.
We'll get the pipes
in a minute.
We'll get the pipes out.
We have a matter of minutes, really, to finish.
Yeah, we'll squeeze
the pipes. We're going to do the pipes, yeah. Philip Mazur is the guitarist, and Anna Colleton, the percussionist.
Woo!
This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. It is always great fun for me to be able to share the studio with musicians of this caliber, which is to say, as you can tell, pretty high. And you know, I said I was going to ask about influence, but I gather that you know you all come from different places. Two of you originally from Chicago. You're in Belgium, Philip, and I know your parents, Aiden, were Irish, but your accent could place you in a number of different places.
That's right. So mum was Tipperary, dad was Sligo. We got a house in Offaly that we spend a lot of time and we built together. I was brought up in London. And actually, I spend most of my time now in Norway with my girlfriend and 3 kids. So the accent's getting different.
I would have made a couple of other guesses at one point when I was answering a previous question. And I settled on England somewhere, yeah. At least for the primary accent, in any event. Your backgrounds influence the music, obviously. Yours most obvious in what we heard so far.
Well, I'm not sure. I think we all have our influences, but
my background is
Flemish music and a lot of European music. I'm sure there's a lot of different things that come from there as well. Yeah.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think if we didn't know Philip, we wouldn't play one of his tunes.
We wouldn't do Flemish songs anyway.
Well, what I meant was we heard some Flemish tunes and a Flemish song, and imagine others from other places as well. Well, I do want to give you time to do another tune or set of tunes, and we'll get to hear the Illan pipes. Those who don't know what Illan pipes are, I won't even bother to spell it for you, but they're basically the small pipes is the other name for them, or is that a different type of
that's
pipe?
That's a different one again. Yeah, those are the Scottish small pipes are basically the same, virtually the same as Highland bagpipes, but they're much quieter, have a different tone, and are blown by bellows rather than by mouth. The Illan pipes are the Irish bagpipe, and they have twice the range of the Scottish pipes. You can play staccato on them, which you can't on Scottish pipes, and they're also blown by bellows, and they also have chordal accompaniment keys that you can play with your wrist.
It's a fun instrument to look at, so we'll tell you how to spell it so you can look it up and at least get pictures. U-I-L-L-E-A-N-N. U-I-L-L-E-A-N-N. Illan pipes. Mm-hmm. Not that you'd ever get that pronunciation from looking at it. In any event, we're going to hear one more set from Comas. They'll be at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana tonight at 8 o'clock on the Piper's Hut Concert Series. And you're listening to 90.9 WYNL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and these folks are Comas.
Thanks very much.